Okay, if you remember, and for those who are visitors, welcome. Glad to have you in class. We are studying a godly family. And just to remind everyone else of the verse that really is kind of the cornerstone of the class is Psalm 127:1. Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchmen stay awake in vain. And so the idea here is that we want to make sure that we're building our house, our family, according to God's plan. And so we've made it through husbands and wives and fathers, and we briefly touched on one aspect of mothers last week, and so we're going to continue talking about mothers this week, and we may or may not make it into talking about children. But as it relates to mothers, you remember that we first began with Titus, the second chapter, verse 4, with a very curious statement about mothers, and that is that the older women were to teach the younger women to love their children. And a very interesting thing, because you would expect that women who are mothers would naturally love their children, and that certainly is the case, but that's not what we see that passage is primarily addressing. Remember that. That what was the word for the love that's mentioned there? When older women are commanded to teach the younger women to love their children, what's the word that was used for love there? Yeah, philios, right? Yeah, that idea of brotherly love. If we were to describe it somewhere else, we would call it brotherly love. But that idea that you are to be that friend to your child, but a true friend. A friend who looks out for them and their best interest in serving the Lord. And so, I thought we would move on and talk about some other things about motherhood and what it means, what God expects of mothers. And let's look to Ezekiel chapter 16. And I can't remember if we talked about this or not. Ezekiel chapter 16, and someone read verse 44. So if we did talk about this, we'll just review it for just a little bit.
Indeed, everyone who quotes Proverbs will use this proverb against you, like mother, like daughter.
All right. You know, we sometimes hear, well, you know, like father, like son, or he's a chip off the old block, or something like that. But the Bible quotes this proverb that says, like mother, like daughter. And just like it's true for sons to be like their fathers, mothers or daughters are often like their mothers. And so the message that I think is important for mothers here is to be an example to your children. And specifically, be an example to your daughters. Certainly, a father can be an example to his daughter. Certainly, a mother can be an example to her sons. But there is something about being the example to the children of your own gender, teaching them what it means to be a godly woman. Because in all likelihood, the kind of woman you are, or in the case of men, the kind of man that you are, is what your children of your gender are going to be. So we have a wonderful example of that. Well, wonderful in a very telling way. It's not a good example. But think of a very wicked, think of the most wicked woman that you can think of in the Bible. Jezebel, yeah. Now, could you imagine Jezebel being your mother? Well, there was a woman whose mother was Jezebel, and her name was Athaliah. And let's go to 2 Kings chapter 11, and let's read about Athaliah. So what do you think? You think Athaliah was a good lady, or do you think Athaliah was not so nice? Yeah, Athaliah was not so nice. 2 Kings chapter 11, verses 1 through 3.
Destroyed all the royal heirs. But Josheba, the daughter of King Joram, sister of Ahaziah, took Joash, the son of Ahaziah, and stole him away from among the king's sons who were being murdered. And they hid him and his nurse in the bedroom from Athaliah, so that he was not killed. So he was hidden with her in the house of the Lord for 6 years, while Athaliah reigned over the land.
All right. So Athaliah at this point would have been what is properly called the queen mother, right? Her son was the king. And her son died. And what does Athaliah do?
Starts killing all the heirs.
Yeah. Now think about that. She starts killing all of her relatives. Now, some of them might not have been her blood relatives, because we know that men had multiple wives at this point in time, particularly the kings. And so she wasn't killing she likely was not killing blood relatives, although she very well could have been. But she wanted power. And so what does she start doing? She starts killing all of the heirs, and she missed one. But this is the kind of woman that comes from a mother like Jezebel. And so I think it's important that we remember that like mother, like daughter. So be an example to your children. Let's go to Matthew chapter 20, and we're going to see another thing, another example. This is a good example of how mothers ought to behave. Do you remember how we talked about how fathers are commanded to pray for your children? And in a very similar way, mothers ought to petition God on the behalf of their children. Here in Matthew chapter 20, someone read 20 through 21.
Then the mother of the sons of Zebedee came up to him with her sons, and kneeling before him, she asked him for something. And he said to her, "What do you want?" And she said to him, "Say that these two sons of mine are to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left, in your kingdom."
All right. Now, this is James and John's mother. We don't know her name. We know that she's married to Zebedee. So Zebedee's wife. She comes to Jesus and asks a question. Now, she doesn't really understand what she's asking, but the principle here is what I think we can learn from. That here, she's concerned about her children's well-being. Now, it might be misdirected, because I think what she's asking for here is, I think we get the picture here that she is expecting Jesus in his kingdom to be like a physical ruling kingdom, and therefore she wants her sons, James and John, to be ruling with him. But still, she's concerned about the best interest of her children, and she petitions Jesus for that. And likewise, mothers today can be concerned and should be concerned about the best interest of their children, but specifically the best interest spiritually of their children, and petition God for and on behalf of them. Before we get talking about the next thing, which I think is the most significant of all of the instructions given to mothers, any comments up to this point? Okay, let's talk about instruction, because of all the things that mothers are commanded, or we see examples of mothers doing in the Bible, this is the one that I think is most significant. So let's make our way back to Proverbs 31. Here in Proverbs 31, we find the example of the virtuous wife. And in verse 26, this is what's said. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and on her tongue is the law of kindness. And so we really begin to see this idea here that a mother is to provide instruction. If we go back to the first chapter of Proverbs, we find Solomon, again, this is Solomon speaking to his son, but listen to what he says about his mother, about his son's mother. "My son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother, for they will be a graceful ornament on your head and chains about your neck." So here's this idea that mothers, even though we saw it with fathers, right? Fathers are supposed to instruct their children, right? Don't provoke your children to wrath, but raise them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. This idea of training your children. Well, the same thing that applies to fathers also appears to apply to mothers, that mothers are to open their mouth in wisdom, to have the law of kindness on their tongue. The children are to not forsake the law of their mother. In Proverbs chapter 23, beginning in verse 22, listen to your father who begot you, and do not despise your mother when she is old. Buy the truth and do not sell it. Also wisdom and instruction and understanding. The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice, and he who begets a wise child will delight in him. Let your father and your mother be glad, and let her who bore you rejoice. So this idea is really pervasive through Proverbs, that just like the father provides instructions, the mother too also provides instructions. And we have a great example of this in the Bible. Let's go to Acts chapter 16. And if someone would, let's read Acts 16, 1 through 2. All right. So here we're introduced for the first time to Timothy. And there's some things we know about Timothy's parents. And what things do we know about them?
His mother was a Jew and his father was a Greek.
All right. And what else do we know? So that's one thing. We know that his mother was a Jew, his father was a Greek. But there's something else that we know.
He's a believer.
That's right. His mother was a believer. And it's almost, we can almost see in here that the way this is written, that it would seem to make sense that what else would we know about his father?
That he was not a believer.
Yeah, it appears as though he was not a believer. Now, does it specifically say that? No, but in the way this is written, it seems to lead us to that thought, that Timothy was the son of a certain Jewish woman who believed, but his father was Greek. This idea that his father probably wasn't a believer. Now, how a Jewish woman married a Greek, I don't know. I mean, we certainly see those things happen today, but we know that would have been forbidden. How is it that Timothy became so well spoken of? Here is verse 2. We find that it said he was well spoken of by the brethren. Well, what is it about Timothy that made him well spoken?
His mother and grandmother.
All right, how do we know that? Well, let's go to the book of 2 Timothy. And Duane, I know where you're going. We need to kind of finish that thought a little bit. It wasn't that his was just because his mother and grandmother, but it was what they did for him, right? Because you know, we know people who have godly parents or godly grandparents, maybe parents who are pillars in the church in a figurative way, and yet the children don't turn out so well. But that wasn't the case with Timothy, was it?
And part of the reason is because, yes, his mother and his grandmother were godly, but Timothy had to accept it and he had to work it out on his own. You can't make someone be a Christian.
Well, yeah, and think about if Timothy's father was a non-believer, he's at a disadvantage from the get-go, isn't he? Particularly because the parent of his own gender is not a believer, and Emily's going to have a greater influence on our daughters than I will, just by virtue of the fact that they're all women, and so Timothy's father likely had. Or could have had a very strong influence to drive him to the Greek way of life, the non-Christian way of life. But yet, that wasn't what happened. And certainly, Timothy made some choices along the way that led to this. But Let's look at 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verses 3 through 5. Someone read those for us.
I thank God, whom I serve with a pure conscience, as my forefathers did, as without ceasing I remember you in my prayers night and day. Greatly desire to see you, being mindful of your tears, that I may be filled with joy. When I call to remembrance the genuine faith that is in you, which dwelt first in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and I am persuaded as is in you also.
All right. So we learn a couple of things in this passage. Here Paul is writing to Timothy, and he's concerned for him. And there in verse 5, he talks about the genuine faith that is in Timothy, that was also in his mother, and that was also in his grandmother. And so how is it that Lois passed on her faith to Eunice, and Eunice passed on her faith to Timothy? Well, we find the answer in 2 Timothy chapter 3. Someone read verses 14 and 15. All right, so how is it that Timothy had a genuine faith? Where did it come from?
Hearing the words of the Scripture.
And hearing it when?
When he was a child.
When he was a child. And who would have been the one teaching him?
Grandmother.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Would it have been his father? Probably not. His father was Greek, and I think we can see that his father was a non-believer, so certainly he wouldn't have been the one teaching. Mike?
I've never really thought of this before, but, you know, this whole thing becomes more curious to me the more I think about it. And that is that his mother must have been married to his father long before the church was established because of Timothy's age. Okay? So his mother actually, the way I understand it, broke the law by marrying. She married a Greek and not a Jew. That was forbidden. But yet, Paul speaks of her in great terms.
Yeah.
So, you know, she obviously became a member of the church when the church was established and put her old way of life behind her. Well, you know, at least that mistake. This means she divorced her husband, because apparently she did not. But, you know, it shows that she was certainly not perfect, as none of us are perfect. And yet she lived a good life and raised a good son. So I never really thought of that before, but due to Timothy's age, she would have had to have married, I think, if that was his real father, and I'm sure that's what Paul's speaking about, she would have had to marry him before the church was established.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about this same issue before, and I didn't really think of it in terms of Eunice, but it will apply as well. Yeah. No matter how you spin it, whether Eunice married this Greek man under the Jewish law, or whether she married him after having become a Christian, she did something that would, for certain under the Jewish law, would have been seen as wrong. It was not God's will that they marry people outside of the Hebrews. I think we might, if she did this while she was, if she had converted and then married, I'd have to look at the time frame just to know whether or not it would have been, the teachings would have been clear at that point. But I think there's plenty of inference that she shouldn't have. But that's a good point, that she married someone that she shouldn't have, and yet she still overcame that. And Timothy overcame it too. Yeah.
This was discussed at length at the two-week meeting with John Locke on Timothy.
Okay.
Talked a lot about. But in my opinion, that whenever she married his father, it was kind of that in-between period. And I don't know if it was before Now, I'm not sure what time, when, how old Timothy was, and when Paul was picking him up
for yeah.
years, but it's kind of that in-between period when I just have a hard time believing that she did something that was just totally a sin, regarded as a sin at that time, because the way Jesus treated the lady that was taken in fornication and everything, I think there was more leniency given. But I believe that the father definitely did not hinder the instruction of Timothy in the scriptures. Because like you said, he would have had a lot of influence on his son. You know, and so he definitely did not hinder that. And the possibility that he was a believer, to me, it's quite possible that he was a believer, but the reason that it was mentioned that she was a believer is because I think she was very strong with her mother all along. You know, she got her strength from her mother, and she's passing it on to her son. Where the father was, if he was a Christian, he was very weak. He was weak in the faith because he was young, a babe in the faith also. But
yeah,
it's not really on your...
Yeah, well, you're right. There's lots of pieces we don't have to the puzzle. The thing that we do have, which is kind of the important point in talking about mothers, is that to me it's very clear that Lois taught her daughter Eunice, and Eunice taught her son Timothy, and that's the point here. We're talking about what obligations do mothers have to their children? It's instruction, just like fathers have. The command to instruct to their children. So what does that tell us? That this is a mutual responsibility. But I also think that we could see from this example that in the absence of one parent who is serving God, you still that doesn't offer you an excuse, right? If your spouse is not a Christian, you still are obligated to teach your children because it's given both to the fathers and to the mothers. All right, let's go to 1 Timothy chapter 2. Dwayne, you asked about this passage like 3 weeks ago, and I said, hold on, because we're getting there. So here it is. One of those verses that maybe when you first look at it, you start scratching your head and think, what on earth can this mean? 1 Timothy chapter 2, someone read verse 15.
Nevertheless, she will be saved, childbearing, if they continue in faith, love, and holiness with self-control.
Okay, wow. Here's this passage that at first blush you think, what on earth are we talking about here, right? Because here in 1 Timothy, we find that she, which I think is generic here speaking of women in general, will be saved in childbearing. Well, what? Okay, so is this some different plan of salvation for women and only for women who have children? Well, certainly that can't be the case, right? Because we know that not all women bear children. We know that God is not a respecter of persons. And so it would seem that this would be contrary to other passages that teach us that there is one way of salvation. So this must mean something else. Well, what does it mean? Well, let's consider the context. So let's go back and read verse 12. You know what, let's come up to verse 11. Let's begin in verse 11. Let a woman learn in silence with all submission. I do not permit a woman to teach or to have authority over a man, but to be in silence. For Adam was formed first, then Eve. And Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived fell into transgression. Nevertheless, she will be saved in childbearing if they continue in faith, love, and holiness with self-control. Now, if we just excluded verse 15, what are we talking about in verses 11 through 14? Well, it references the fall of man, but even before that, what's the big topic? Yeah, it's this hierarchy of authority, things that we've talked about already when we talked about husbands and wives. And so it's in that context that we find verse 15. Nevertheless, you will be saved in childbearing if they continue in faith, love, holiness, with self-control. When I look at this passage, and maybe you don't see it this way, and I'm certainly open for some conversation on this, what I see here is that although women are to learn in silence, they're not to have authority over men, they will still have influence. And that's what I see here. What I see here is that women, specifically mothers, will have an influence on the church. And they'll have an influence on the church through their children. Think about Eunice, Lois, and Timothy. A wonderful example of that. Yeah, well, no. You had told me that this was a topic of conversation at the 2 week study, so I'm curious as to how this was addressed there.
I'm not really. I can't remember the particulars, but I remember what was going through my mind while I was thinking about it. I think we have to look at that word childbearing in a little broader sense, that it's not necessarily just the giving birth to a child, but I think it's the duties that is attendant upon one's children. So a grandmother can fulfill this the same as the mother that gave actual birth. Or another sister in the church can fulfill this with our children as they teach them in the church. So I just think it's talking about what you've been saying, that the mothers have this special ability and duty to instill within children the truth. In a way that the father can't or other men can't.
That's how I see it. I see it as mothers will have influence. That's what I see here. And it reminds me of some things that... you ever heard it said, the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world? Right? You ever heard that said? Who said that? Anybody know who said that? I didn't know. I had to look it up. Napoleon said that. Napoleon said, the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. Now, I find it interesting that there were 69 kings of France. Of course, we know that Napoleon was French. Of the 69 kings of France, generally it's believed that only 3 of them were beloved by the people. The rest of them, the people just despised. And of those 3, do you know what they all had in common? They were all raised by their mother instead of some tutor or some guardian. I mean, think about that. That seems quite interesting to me. Now, think about this idea of influence on your children. And let's go back to Proverbs 31. And I think sometimes we forget what Proverbs 31 is. We think of it as, oh, this is the passage of the virtuous wife. Well, yes, that certainly is true, but that's only part of this chapter. Let's look at that first, though. Let's look at Proverbs 31 and verse 28. If someone would read that for us. Proverbs 31, 28.
The children rise up and call her blessed also, and he praises her.
All right, so we see this idea that this woman has some influence, right? Her children rise up and call her blessed. She certainly has influence over her children. Her husband praises her. So here we have this idea, somewhat, of the woman having influence over her family. But now let's go to verse 1. Verse 1, the words of King Lemuel, the utterance which his mother taught him. So here we find King Lemuel, which is likely Solomon. Solomon's likely writing about himself and just not using his own name here. And if that's the case, this is very interesting too, right? So here in Proverbs 31 and 1, we find that actually this entire chapter is the teachings of a mother to her son who is either a king or will become a king. And so if this is Solomon, right, then who is this that's teaching Solomon?
Bathsheba.
Well, isn't that very interesting? Because what else do we know about Bathsheba?
She committed
herself. That's absolutely right. And so even if we look back at the situation with Eunice and her husband, and maybe that's a little murky, right? If it is in fact true that King Lemuel is Solomon, then this would make these writings, the origin, these teachings, these came from Bathsheba. And you think about the sin that Bathsheba had to overcome. She had to overcome some very poor choices early in her life. And if that's the case, then look at what her teachings here are. Now let's consider the instructions here, because I think this is very interesting. Knowing what we're told here in verse 1, that this is, regardless, this is the utterance of a king's mother. And maybe this came early in life, maybe this came late in life. I tend to think this came earlier in life, that this was a mother's instructions to her son, potentially as he was coming to power. But listen to what she is telling him. Let's look at the first part of chapter 31, the part that really isn't about a virtuous wife. Beginning in verse 2. What, my son, and what, son of my womb, and what, son of my vows, do not give your strength to women, nor your ways to that which destroy kings. It is not for you, it is not for kings, O Lemuel. It is not for kings to drink wine, nor for princes intoxicating drink, lest they drink and forget the law and pervert the justice of all the afflicted. Give strong drink to him who is perishing, and wine to those who are bitter of heart. Let him drink and forget his poverty. Let him remember his misery no more. Open your mouth for the speechless. In the cause of all who are appointed to die, open your mouth, judge righteously, and plead the case of the poor and needy. So prior to giving instructions about a virtuous wife, this mother of King Lemuel gives these instructions. And notice how she understands women, right? Because she is a woman. And what's the very first thing she tells Solomon? Something that he probably should have known, right? But if this is Solomon, think about the connotation of the very first instructions that Bathsheba is giving to Solomon here. Do not give your strength to women. And what did Solomon do? He had essentially 1,000 wives. And look at all the things that those women had influence on him. They drove him to serve false gods. And so she understands the influence that women can have on men and teaches him to avoid giving his strength to them. In verses 4 through 7, she reminds him, don't let your judgment be impaired. Make sure that you're clear-headed when you make decisions. And then in verses 8 through 9, speak up for those who cannot speak. Think about that, right? Think about, here is Solomon's mother, a woman who at the time, remember, this was a time when women were viewed as property. She wouldn't have had a voice. She's talking about herself here in some ways. Speak up for those who cannot. Open your mouth for the speechless. Well, who would that be? Well, it certainly would be women of the day. And it appears that Bathsheba, or at least King Lemuel's mother here, is the one who instructs the king in what to look for in a wife. And so I think this is a good message for mothers of sons. That mothers who have sons, make sure you teach them what to look for in a wife. Because my mom said this to me, and I can't remember exactly how it goes. Something like, if you have a daughter, you have them for life, but if you have a son, only till they have a wife, or something like that. I'm not quite sure exactly how it goes, but you think about that, right? I'm here, and my parents are in Kansas City. Who influences me more now? Think about you as a husband. Who influences you more, your mother or your wife? Your wife. So, mothers of sons, make sure you're teaching your sons about what to look for in a mate, because when they marry, you won't be the center of their life anymore. Dwayne, you had a comment.
Yeah, my mind was going the very same way yours was. I remember very vividly when I graduated from high school in Summersville. and got ready to head off for St. Louis. My mom sat me down. I'll never forget the talk that she had. And it was about watch the women and watch drink and, you know, all these things. It yeah. sounds very similar.
Sounds like Proverbs 31, doesn't it? What a great place to start if you're if you don't know where to start. Well, just start with Proverbs 31. Hey, we need to have a talk. And here it is. Other comments. Chris.
I grew up in a home where my father was an unbeliever and my mother was a believer. And I think it's such a hard line that she had to walk of trying to act as a wife and in her role and then still try to guide a son and a daughter in the way. And there was clearly two different points of view that was always being presented. And I found that my mom always seized every opportunity not to go against what her husband was doing or saying, but rather just fill us with the word, to have more input of God in our lives than what the world was being input in our household. And so I think that it's that gentle teaching that always happened, that it wasn't an adverse, you know, they weren't against each other. It was just she was guiding us in the way that was going to, you know, lead us closer to God. And it was never about his life. It was about our lives. And it was a beautiful thing for us.
Yeah, it reminds me of what we talked about a couple of weeks ago with fathers, which can equally apply to mothers too, that when are you supposed to teach your children? Every opportunity you have, right? When you get up, when you lie down, when you go out, when you come in, all of those. Every opportunity you get, and it's so much more important when you have those mixed messages coming from your parents. All right, I want to look at one other mother in the Scriptures. In John, the second chapter, we find Jesus and Mary at a wedding. Now, think about the influence that Mary has on Jesus. Right? We've talked about this before, and it always just sort of makes me think, what on earth is going on here? In verse 1, on the third day, there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Now, both Jesus and his disciples were invited to the wedding, and when they ran out of wine, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." Jesus said to her, "Woman, what does your concern have to do with me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Whatever he says to you, do it." Okay, did Mary not listen to Jesus? Right? Here, Mary and Jesus are at a wedding. They run out of wine. And Mary says to Jesus, "Hey, they don't have any wine." And can you see how Mary is asking a question and making a statement? "Hey, Jesus, they ran out of wine." You know, the inference here is do something about it. And Jesus' response is, "This isn't a concern for me. My time hasn't come." Yet, what does Mary do? Mary gives the servants instructions. So why is it that after Jesus says, "My time hasn't come," and that this really isn't a concern for me, why is it that Jesus still turns water into wine? Why does he do that?
Possibly just to honor his mother.
Absolutely. And I think that's the only reasonable explanation here. Is that if your children, and we'll talk about children next week, if your children are serving God, then they will do what you ask them to do. And
even when you're an adult.
That's right. Jesus here was, we get the picture that they came separately. They weren't coming together. But Jesus was certainly over the age of 30 because he had his disciples with him. And so Jesus still honored his mother. And so, mothers have an influence on their children. Okay, that was all I wanted to say on mothers. Any other comments?
On this right here, Jesus was thinking about spiritual things. She was thinking about physical, just like he was in the house of Mary and Martha. You know,
yeah.
Martha said, "Make my sister help me get the food ready."
Yeah.
And Jesus said, "Well, listening to me is more important than eating."
You know, the other thing that's interesting here is Jesus had never performed a miracle that we know of. And how is it that Mary knew that Jesus could do something like this? Well, she'd been watching him, right? She knew her children, she knew her son, and she knew his limitations, which in this case, was none. She knew that he could do anything. Remember Luke chapter 2, verse 19, but Mary kept all of these things in her heart and pondered them. She knew Jesus. She watched him. She knew he could do this. Okay, next week we'll talk about children.